So as we continue the scan here, you can move from the left heel up in the direction of the head along the leg, and note that for almost everybody there's a space behind the leg, between the leg and the floor, behind the ankle. And if you move up a little further, once again the low leg is in contact with the floor. And if you consider the heel and the low leg, you get a sense that there's that space behind the ankle has some shape. So you get a sense of that, the height of it. Maybe it has some sense of how it changes along that arc behind the ankle. And you compare to the other side on the right. It can seem a little peculiar, but it's certainly the case that you can have a sense of the space behind the leg, in part because it's bounded by sensation of the heel and the calf. Then you come up the leg a little farther and see, is the left leg on the floor behind the knee? Is there space there? How far up and down does that space extend? What's your sense of it? That space is, of course, affected by the degree to which the leg is rolled out to the side when it rests here. So if you compare the right, how is it different? As you come farther up the leg, is the upper leg on the left resting against the floor in some way? Is it away from the floor? Or is it a little vague? If it's vague, what's your general sense of how much of it's in contact, how it's in contact, what the shape of any space is like? And you compare to the right as well. Then you come up to the pelvis. The pelvis is sided, it has two sides, but you can compare the left and right of your contact behind the pelvis. Is it a little biased toward one side? That is the pelvis more firmly in contact on the left or the right? More of the buttock pressed into the floor or less? And you move up to the low back. Again, there's the sense of sidedness. Is one side of the low back closer to the floor? Is where does the space begin just above the left and right hip? Is your sense of the space or quality of contact between the pelvis and then gradually the low ribs on the left and right similar or different from side to side? You move up into the rib cage. Which ribs? You don't have to know the specific anatomical terms, but in your field of experience, where do you sense ribs in contact with the floor on the right and on the left? And how are the two sides different? What does that suggest about how you lay on the floor? Perhaps you're a little more to one side, or one side shorter or longer. And you continue up and note how the whole rib cage rests on the floor and the upper back, the two shoulders. You can compare, how's the left one on the floor? What parts of the shoulder are clearly on the floor? What parts are away? And again, in your immediate experience, there's some assessing going on here, but mostly it's looking for distinctions in your experience in particular locations and then comparing to the other side. Is one shoulder more firmly into the floor? Does it feel like it rests on a larger area on the floor? And then you can consider the left arm. How is it arrayed on the floor? What's your sense of the distance between the rib cage on the left and the left elbow? What's your sense of the distance between the hand and the left hip? And how is the arm itself arranged on the floor? Are there your fingertips in contact? Are the knuckles in contact? For either of those, which fingers, which knuckles, what part of the elbow and the forearm rests on the floor? And when you compare to the right, how is it different? Is there a difference in the way the fingertips or the number of fingertips or knuckles are in contact with the floor? And what about those distances between the rib cage or the hip and the arm itself? And if you return to a more central location, as you move in the direction of the head, where does the back come away from the floor? Where do the shoulders come away from the floor? Where are they not in contact? And then returning to the notion of how the head rests on the floor, where is that patch of contact? If you consider your left and right sort of symmetrically, is that patch of contact a little more to one side or the other? And what does it suggest to you about the tilt of the head? If you were standing, would you be looking up a little? Would you be looking forward? Would you be looking down a little to the left or right? You sort of take this whole set of impressions and sensations and inferences and fold in whatever you note about the movements of breathing. Where do you note the initiation of the inhalation? Where do you sense movement of air? Is there movement in the belly or the low abdomen, any at all in the rib cage, perhaps the low ribs? And then this sense of the whole set of spacings behind the back and head and legs and the movements of breathing, how do you get a sense about the whole shape of the spine, starting from the tailbone, heading all the way up to the base of the skull? The top of the spine anatomically is pretty much between the openings in the ear, right near the jawline there. So the top of the spine there, what are those curves like going down through the rib cage to the lower back into the pelvis, and then of course curving again toward the tailbone, which is up off the floor between the legs a little bit. Then this is a bit of an extended scan, but it's a good way to start a series of lessons, begin to get the kind of, to address these capacities to understand our experience, to note in immediate terms what we're experiencing. And you get kind of an overall snapshot, whatever stands out or however a composite comes together, you lying on the floor at the beginning of the lesson here. Maybe it's an image of those contact patches on the floor. Maybe it's a broader set of spatial relations, the limbs, maybe it's difference between the right and left or top and bottom. Whatever it is for you, just sort of note it, the idea that you might note difference later. Okay, take the two hands together in front of you and just interlace the fingers. And now take your interlaced hands behind the head, lift it a little away from the floor, and rest the head in the hands. Bring the elbows forward to cup the head a little bit, forward in the direction of the ceiling. And now several times, slowly and making each movement distinct, lift the head a little bit away from the floor and return it. So note right away, where do you start that movement? Where do you note muscular effort or initiation? How distributed is your sense of that movement? Is it mostly in the head? You can leave your elbows forward just so it's, you don't have to adjust them constantly. And just lift the head and note and set it down each time. Really pause between movements so the head really rests. And then note what you're doing with your breathing as you begin the lift of the head. That is it you exhaling, you inhaling? Is it neutral? It's a little tricky. As soon as we bring attention to something like this, you can begin to vary it. So part of the challenge is to just note what you do, in fact, do. Okay, you note any change in the contact of the ribs behind as you lift the head and lower it? General sense of effort? How does that shape of the spine, the shaping of the spine, adjust as you lift the head in your impressions? All right, and then just leave the head, take the hands out from behind, unclasp them and lay them alongside and rest. So rest in the awareness through movement is often just a pause to really be able to come back to movement with a sort of refreshed sense. It's not usually to rest because you're tired, it's to rest your attention, to leave off doing. All right, now with the arms alongside, several times, see what it's like to bring the head away from the floor without the use of the hands. What do you do in the middle of yourself to facilitate that? Does it seem more difficult than when you use your hands? Do you press into the floor differently behind yourself when you take the head forward? Is the available range a little different? You just try this several times and note how it's different from having the hands behind the head, and then pause. Now bend the two knees and put the soles of the feet on the floor so that the low legs are standing. And then with the legs, knees bent and the feet standing, note how you do that. How close are the feet from each other? How close are they from the pelvis? And note, do you have to do a little work to hold the knees up here? So first, try putting the inside edges of the feet and the insides of the knees together. So you put the whole lower leg in contact. So the feet are touching the ankles to the degree that they do the knees. And note, you have to do a little bit of work here to hold the knees from falling apart. Now take them quite wide, the feet quite wide, and see what that's like, how that affects. So the feet are standing and the knees are toward the ceiling. The soles of the feet are on the floor. Just separate the feet. See what that's like. So put the soles of the feet on the floor and stand the feet, but keep the feet far apart. What's that like with the feet standing like this on the soles, but the knees apart? Is that a little difficult? And then put them somewhere in the middle where you feel like maybe that's quite comfortable. So there's distinctions about that. So stand your feet so it's comfortable. Ralph, stand the feet so the soles are on the floor. Yeah, there you go. So you can take the feet apart a little bit so it's kind of comfortable. The feet apart so they're not together. Those right there. And try drawing the heels a little closer to the pelvis and just see what that's like. Does it take a little work to do that? How does it change the position of the pelvis and maybe the low back? Then take the feet farther away. Quite far, maybe, from the pelvis, and see what that's like. It takes a little work. So we're just trying some different positions. And then put them somewhere where it's comfortable, where you feel like the legs are stable, or the soles of the feet are where you want them, so that you can imagine if somebody came along and wanted to lean on your knees, that there was a kind of easy stability there. Maybe it's close to what you did at first. Maybe it's a little different. Now interlace the fingers again. Take the hands behind the head. Bring the elbows forward so the forearms cradle the head. Leave them about like that. And begin here in this position to take the head away from the floor. So you make simple movements. You don't go as far as you can. You stay in a comfortable range. And really direct your attention to what's going on in the whole rib cage. Maybe the middle of yourself, the belly. Is the action on the two sides symmetrical? You don't need to change it, just note what you find in that respect. Where do you work to lift the head away from the floor? You really distinctly set the head down. You can keep the elbows forward for simplicity's sake. You know, perhaps even if there's movement in the low back as you lift the head. If so, what happens there? Maybe lifting the head, you could even press the floating ribs, the low ribs, or the lumbar back into the floor a little bit to lift the head so that there's a kind of larger movement going on. And if that's starting to happen, what happens in the pelvis? Is there any tipping there? Does the pelvis roll on the floor a little bit? All right, then leave it. Take the hands up from behind the head, bring them alongside, and slowly extend the legs. So the legs are long and the arms are long. You come back to this position. If it's possible to slide them on the floor, great. It's a little tricky with bare feet in the mat sometimes. And note your contact with the floor here, just after these few movements. Do you note any difference along the back of yourself, along the front of yourself, side to side, the way the hands rest on the floor, sense of length through the trunk or the legs? You don't need to create a sense of difference. You just look for what's there. And maybe that makes sense, any of those distinctions, and maybe not. Okay, stand the legs again. Interlace the fingers and take the hands behind the head. As before, yeah, cradle the head with the arms so the elbows come forward. And this time, try this sort of contrary action where you lift the low back away from the floor and lift the head. And see, is that helpful? Does it go with the movement? Does it go against it? It's certainly possible. Some people do this immediately when they're lifting the head. So the pelvis stays on the floor and just the low back comes forward. As with the checking the positions of the feet, is this helpful or not so helpful? Because it's certainly doable. Then after you've experimented with that a little bit, try inhaling into the upper chest as you lift the head and take the low back away from the floor. What happens to the ease of lifting the head? Then leave it off and exhale as you begin the lift, and take the low ribs and low back toward the floor. Let the pelvis tilt a little and lift the head that way, as you were before, likely. And note any difference in ease. You make sure the lifting of the head is smooth and continuous, and also the lowering of the head to the floor. So you note what happens through the middle of yourself as you're bringing the head back as well as forward. All right, and then take the arms alongside, extend the legs, and rest. So these variations in a lesson like this offer a couple of things at least. Some of the repetition is useful to, as you iterate, to explore your sensation, your correlation of sensation and action, and also just to see what a difference it makes to do things one way or another. Looking for a sense of how the whole comes into play to take up an action which we might consider local, the movement of the head. Okay, interlace the fingers in just in front of yourself for a moment, and then note the way that you've interlaced the fingers and change them to the other one. So one thumb would be closer to the chin or nose. Note how that sensation is different there. Likely you went with your habit the first time. So choose the one that you weren't using. Maybe that's your non-habitual one. And take the hands behind the head and bring the elbows forward. And first note what the sensations with the fingers like this are like, how different the sensations are. Bring the elbows forward and here with the legs long, with this notion that you use the movement of the spine to lift the head, try it out with the legs long. Is it different from before? Is it different with this orientation or this arrangement of the fingers and hands? Start the lift as you begin the exhalation, so you coordinate those two. And then actually continue the exhalation until you set the head down, and then inhale once the head is fully resting on the floor. Try that coordination. Note what happens in the sternum in the front of the chest as you lift the head. Which direction does it go? That it falls back toward the floor perhaps, that it goes down in the direction of the pelvis as the low back comes toward the floor. Do you note any action in the pelvis as you lift the head? If you look carefully, sense carefully. And if there's a little action in the pelvis as the low back goes back, maybe you feel that even in your feet a little bit. And if you don't quite note action in the pelvis or the legs, just make the movement a little bit larger. Check it out to see if a slightly larger movement is comfortable. If it's not comfortable, there's no need to make it larger. And if you can sense throughout yourself how an action like this creates change, in some sense globally, you also don't need to make the action any larger. All right, and unfold the arms, bring them alongside, and rest. With the legs long, interlace the hands the original way or the first way and bring them behind the head. This time with the elbows wide, so they're near the floor. Try bringing the head forward here, leaving the elbows out to the side. What's that like? What do you need to do in the middle of yourself to lift the head with the elbows apart? You bring the head back, rest it. So you discreetly pause. Distinctly pause, then lift again. And what can you do in the middle of yourself to simplify this action a little bit? The low ribs come to the floor, maybe even the pelvis tips so that the tailbone comes between the legs away from the floor a little bit. As the low back goes back, the low ribs go back and the head lifts, the sternum comes down and back toward the back ribs a little bit. You fold in the front of yourself to take the head forward. All right, take the arms out and bring them alongside and rest. Maybe in the way that you note distinctions in the sort of the contact with the floor or the muscular activity in these different ways of lifting the head, maybe you also note in their aftermath, in their wake, that the sensation throughout yourself is a little bit different. Sense of length, maybe something that seems a little abstract, like your sense of flatness or width or depth from front to back might seem a little different. Maybe the position of the head on the floor or the way the legs are arranged. And again, for any of these, maybe not for you. Okay, bend the two legs, interlace the fingers however you like, bring the arms behind the head. And now, lift the 2 feet off the floor so you bring your knees a little more in front of the torso and find a place where you're relatively balanced. Note that that changes the pelvis a little. Bring the elbows forward and don't bring the elbows to the knees. Just begin to fold so that it's as if the nose was going to go between the knees a little bit in that direction, not to that location. So see what it's like here to lift and lower the head with the knees in the air, and how does that change what happens along the backside of you against the floor? When do you initiate the movement with relation to your breathing? What's your sense of the folding in the front of the rib cage or the shortening in the front of the abdomen? What rolls into the floor? And then begin to bring the knees a little in the direction of the elbows. Don't bring them together, even if you can, but just gently explore that movement as you lift the head and maybe also the shoulders a little away from the floor as the movement becomes a little larger. How the whole shape of the back changes. You can tie it to your breathing and see if it makes sense to exhale as you bring the... It's as if you were going to take the face, the nose, the mouth between the knees, but not too there, in that direction. Take care not to pull at the end and just come to the comfortable range and then return to the floor. So the knees come toward the elbows come toward the knees. And if you increase the action of the knees just a little bit, note how the pelvis rolls on the floor. Maybe the tailbone, the base of the pelvis, begins to lift a little bit. So you really shorten in the front and lengthen along the whole back and fold to bring the elbows and the knees closer together, which is not to say together. It may be important for something, but it's not important for this. Quality of the movement, the ability to sustain your attention, those are the things of interest. Okay, set down the feet, leave that, take the arms alongside, extend the legs and rest. Another feature of repetition in simple lessons like this, where variations on one sort of fundamental kind of movement are repeated, you'll perhaps note when at the end of the lesson when you come up to stand that there's some change through sticking to a pretty simple action here. That said, we'll introduce some variations, so bend the knees and stand the feet. Take the hands behind the head, interlace. And then leave the right hand behind the head. And with the left hand, take the left hand out and reach between your legs to take a hold of the top of the shin below the right knee. The right knee with the left hand. And you can leave the left leg on the floor. And now fold the elbow forward from the shoulder there. And here, without a sense that you're going to bring them together, bring them closer. Take the elbow in the direction of the knee and the knee in the direction of the elbow. So the left leg is standing rather than long. Stand the left leg rather than leaving it long. And what do you do in the middle of yourself? What happens on the back? This is quite an asymmetrical action. And if you allow the head to turn a little bit to bring the elbow toward the knee, what direction does the head go? If you thought that you intended to bring the elbow to the knee, what would be the simplest configuration in the middle of yourself to allow that? Would the head turn a little to the left or right, perhaps? Can try that out. Try turning the head into the elbow, letting the elbow come along. Turn the head a little to the left as you bring the elbow toward the knee and the knee toward the elbow. So the nose turns to the left, the face turns to the left. You just try it out. Does that let the elbow come a little closer? Does it make the movement simpler? How does it affect this asymmetry in the back now? And check how much work you're doing with the left hand. See if it can kind of hold gently so that it guides the knee and that you're actually doing the work in the trunk and the shoulders, the pelvis. Try turning the head a little bit to the right as you go forward too and see if that, does that impede the movement? Does it help? And be sure you're using maybe the left leg or the pelvis so that you bring the right knee a little closer to the elbow too. So they come toward each other. See when you breathe and what the sort of synchrony of that is. All right, next time you have your head on the floor, just change the hands. Leave everything else the way it is. So the left hand's behind the head and the right's gripping the right knee. So you just switch the hands. And now, diagonally here, take up this action of bringing the elbow toward the knee and the knee toward the elbow. What happens with the head here? What makes, as we say, somatologic sense? The elbow will cross the center line or head toward the center line. You can try taking it the other way. You can try to turn to the left as you try to take the elbow to the right. See if that helps or hinders. Be sure you don't hold your breath, but see how you're synchronizing it. And as you try these variations, what happens with your contact to the floor or the whole shaping of the low back and ribs as you? What part presses into the floor more? What part less than the symmetrical version? All right, then, if you want to do a few more, please do. Otherwise, when you're ready to rest, unfold yourself and extend the limbs and rest. What's the sense of your two sides like now? And maybe it's one of these things like length or pressure, but maybe it's something specific to you, like one side feels harder or softer or lighter or heavier, something like that. It's maybe something I haven't mentioned. It's whatever sort of domain of distinction that you want to, you find yourself, how is it different from left to right? And in the same way that we're making, or in a similar way that we're making comparisons right to left, you spatially, temporally, you can make distinctions from before, earlier in the lesson, to now. It's your sort of sense, contact with the floor, length, pressure, organization, width, any of these things. How does that compare to the beginning of the lesson and now? All right, bend the legs. Take the left hand behind the head and reach between the knees and take the left leg with the right hand. So now here it's the left elbow and the left knee that you're bringing together. So we're bringing toward. Take care that you don't try to press them together. It's not a matter of distance or contact. It's just what's the initiation of the movement like, the smoothness of it, the orientation of the head. Does your head turn a little to one side to bring the elbow to the knee to the elbow? What do you do with your right foot? Do you press a little or lift a little? How can you make the movement inclusive of more of yourself? The pelvis is involved, the low back, the low ribs, the folding in the front, the descending and falling back toward the floor of the sternum. To what degree does the shoulder come away from the floor? What's your sense of the changing distance between the knee and the elbow? And what's going on even in your eyes, your face, the tongue? How does the tongue rest in the jaw? What's the joint of the jaw like as you bring the elbow toward the knee? And then just switch the hands. So same knee, different hand. Same head, different hand. Try out this diagonal version of drawing the limbs together. And, you know, don't hold. Just once you come as far forward as you're going comfortably, return, pausing at the floor. See what you do with your head. Does it make sense to turn it a little one way or the other? Which ear gets closer to the knee? Does it change as you bring the head forward? What's happening in the right foot, the low back? How about that tailbone? Can you find movement there as the pelvis moves? Can you note movement there? How are you coordinating your breathing? You try a couple variations. Which way you turn your head? Does one way interfere with the movement? Does one way aid it? That is, does it make it simpler or more accessible? If you think of the elbow coming to the knee, is that different from thinking of the knee coming to the elbow? And again, be sure you're not holding too tightly with the left hand, that it's more guiding and the work is in the trunk. And leave it and rest. Okay, bend the knees, stand the feet, interlace the fingers, take the hands behind the head and bring the elbows forward. And here, before you begin moving, pretend it, think it, imagine it in a very full sort of sense what you will do to bring the knees in the direction of the elbows and the elbows in the direction of the knees. Of course, you'll be lifting them first, but think it through. What goes back into the floor? What moves first? What will you do with your breathing? And sort of try to flesh that out in your really your somatosensory imagination. That is, you really project that you will be doing this movement as fully as you can. What will happen in the shoulders, how the face comes forward, what happens to the chin, the tailbone, the breathing. And when you've thought that through about 10 times, maybe you've done several already, in your imagination as fully as you can, then lift the knees away from the floor when you're ready and try the movement several times. Maybe you'll note when you're imagining that you're really on the cusp of action, that you may actually have to withhold from acting as you imagine more fully. There's a relationship there between action and imagination. You leave your feet off the floor as you're doing your repeated movements, as we did before. Just compare now, what's the imagined action like compared to the actual action? Were there things that you left out? Were there things that you are clearer or less clear than you imagined? See if you can really think about, you tip the pelvis to bring the knees and the head closer together. You imagine that it's sort of the nose that's going between, in the direction of between the knees. What's happening with the breathing? How does the front fold as the back lengthens? How much do the shoulders lift? What happens in the tailbone? The two sides of the low back? What's your sense of the arc of the nose, two ears? You sort of fill out this sense of the action. All right, set the feet down, take the head down, and take the arms alongside, extend the legs, rest. All right, stand the feet and bring the hands behind the head with the fingers interlaced, however you like. Now, bring the elbows forward and lift the head and take the head as far forward as you can comfortably and leave it there. And then very slowly extend the legs, leaving the head as much as you can undisturbed. See what that's like in the trunk, what happens there. So until the legs are fully extended and resting. And once the legs are fully extended, bring the head back to the floor. See what changes in the middle of yourself. And stand the feet and repeat. So you take the head forward, the knees, the shoulders, I'm sorry, the elbows, the shoulders forward. And then once you're comfortably as far forward as you can, slowly extend the legs, leaving the trunk to the degree that you can, undisturbed. Let's do that a couple more times. See what you do with the breathing, what the difference is like, the action in the middle of yourself, where you find work, what's pressed into the floor. What happens in the pelvis? There's a way it draws attention to the trunk that's a little different from what we've done before. And bring the arms alongside and rest. Stand the feet, take the hands behind the head, and think it through a few times what it's like to leave the feet on the floor and simply lift the head as you did earlier in the lesson with the elbows forward. Just imagine it 3, 4, 5 times, how you'll turn the pelvis to lift the head. And once you get a clear-ish sense in your imagination of how you will do that, go ahead and do the movement several times. What goes back, what comes forward, what's the arc of the tip of the nose, the top of the head, what happens in the pelvis, the low back, and imagination may be enough for you. It's always, always an option in awareness through movement. Then extend the legs and lift the head on the floor and just try this lifting that we did early on. You bring the elbows forward and think it a few times. Imagine it. Pretend it in a sense. Once you've done that, try it out. See if it's possible to think that you tip the pelvis to shape the spine to lift the head. That the initiation is in the pelvis rather than the head. You can imagine you're going to look between your feet, perhaps, that the orientation of the face is like that. Note if you find that the action goes beyond the pelvis down toward the feet, if you notice any slight movement there, as you take the tailbone toward the ceiling, forward relative to yourself, as the low back goes closer to the floor and the pelvis tips like that. Is it different from the beginning of the lesson? Perhaps easier or simpler or not so much. And then leave your head, take the arms out, bring them alongside. Rest. To the degree that you do recall what this initial sense of laying on your back on the floor was like at the beginning of the lesson, how does it compare to now? Something that stood out before, length or front to back depth or sense of length of the limbs or the position of the head, has it changed a little? Quality of breathing? Something else? How much of your back rests on the floor now compared to what you remember from earlier? Is there a difference? So when you come up to stand, try to keep this sort of self-reflective sense here. And so you kind of gradually roll to a side and come up to sit. Kind of keeping the sense of yourself clear, not adjusting too many things or fixing anything. Just make it gradual, kind of easy, come to one side, pause briefly in sitting, and then make your way to standing. Just pause once you get to standing. Pause before you think to adjust your clothes or your hair or stretch or do anything to adjust yourself. Just to find out what it's like after the lesson, what you're like. Once you get to standing, just pause for a moment, the 2 feet side by side, and note the carriage of the head, how the face is tipped up or down, whether it's a little right or left. What's your sense of how the shoulders hang, how how the weight falls into the 2 feet. Quality of breathing is like here in this very similar configuration, but now upright. Your feet to the floor and your head to the ceiling. And try shifting a little from one side to the other. Then take a little walk around. You can walk deliberately and then gradually walk a little as you would, and note what stands out. Turn side to side a little, check that out, maybe take a few steps backward. And we'll call it a lesson. Thank you, everyone. All right, we got a thumbs up from Ralph. What did you make of that, Max? Hmm? What did you make of that?
As always, confusing.
What's confusing?
When you're supposed to compare the feelings to previous state, it's not a conscious action, actually, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
It's not a conscious part of the class.
It could be, but it's never like completely clear, in my experience. It's something that you kind of develop facility with, and maybe at some point, maybe it's even when it's specific, sometimes it's about like, ooh, yeah, boy, that side's really bugging me, and I can really feel that it's pushed into the floor or it's forward, and then later you note some difference. Or maybe it's just like something stands out, like, wow, why is my back so far from the floor? And then later you're like, oh, that's funny, it's closer to the floor. Just things like that. For sure, there's a sort of like a vocabulary that you develop in your sensations, your impressions, mm-hmm. et cetera. I don't know if you were here for any of the lessons, we'll talk about them, but the kind of idea of five lines where you're kind of like most fundamental human forms, like a stick figure, basically, and you correlate with that your experience and find out like, well, that's interesting. What am I doing? It is different from side to side. You see that what you do can change that. And then, in fact, our experience is plastic. Maybe not for you. Oh, Ralph's fixing himself. Are you all right there? Yeah. Or are you just trying some things out?
Yeah.
How's that, Peter?
Very interesting.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, how so? What stands out for you, if anything, if it's verbal, verbalizable?
So initially, it was like trying to reflect on the sensation of like just my heels resting on the ground, for example. It was interesting because it's like it's like a referential problem.
Yes.
Where it's like, well, if I just like feel the heel in itself, in relation to itself, it's like, okay, it feels a certain way.
Yeah.
But then in relation to the other side or in relation to the rest of me, it's very like, oh, okay, it's different. So what am I actually feeling? Is it like, is that my heel feeling that, or is it only in relation to that, to the rest of me? And then the other referential thing was like, well, I don't know if it's referential, like a sensational thing. It almost like made sense to me why in Zazen you don't move.
Yes, yeah.
Because it's hard to like, it's hard to put awareness into some part of you without a little bit of movement.
Exactly. These are great impressions. It's very interesting.
It's like
people will do
if
that.
If I move a tiny bit, then I can feel it so much better. Or I can like
exactly.
Be a lot more aware
yes.
of where that is.
Yes. And the referential piece is key. Feldenkrais, one of his stated goals for awareness through movement and for functional integration is to complete the self-image, is the way he puts it, which is kind of literally this image, like, wow, okay, I do know where my heels are. I do know where the back of my head is, where my left ear is compared to my right ear, what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing in the act of doing it, is how he defines awareness, actually. So to know what you're doing while doing, so that you're not just sort of careening along, but you actually, it's tied to an idea he calls, it's sort of a general idea, which he calls reversibility. So in lessons, it's frequently like, well, can you go back the way that you came up? And he's looking for a general kind of like, well, it's not just like, you just, but you can't go back. It's it comes directly out of his judo experience, where he observed, though the movements are kind of dynamic, you don't want something so strongly that you can't change it in action. So, but of course, it happens slowly, generally. But for sure, the referential pieces, it's really true. And what you say, people in the beginning will often be like, oh, my left, they'll just start to do that. Like, no, no, don't move yourself. Just find your left heel. What's it like at the moment? So.
Yeah, and I noticed, like, I guess both of those things kind of rolled into the awareness before, the, or like at the beginning of the lesson, of like the space in the lower back in relation to the mat. And I didn't, like, I knew there was a space there and I could kind of feel it around, but then I wasn't sure, like, how high my spine was, for example, off the mat. And then after, like, at the end, it was like, I know exactly
how far
it is. Exactly how far it is.
This is why he called it awareness through movement. So, I mean, the awareness is a, it's a cognitive or mental kind of activity or function or something like that. But you can change it through movement, especially when you think of yourself as a human being doing things. You know, so the movement, the activity part, I mean, he was an action guy. So it's really interesting to think from his perspective in that way.
And it's almost like parts of my body were like, almost like sleeping.
Exactly.
And it was like, oh. So like when I rest, it's like, oh, that whole side of me is like awake now. And, or I can feel it much better. And that side's still kind of sleeping, and then we do the other side, and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a ton of interesting stuff. My Feldenkrais trainer, Dennis Leary, was very interested in those aspects. And so that you, that activity of locating your heels relative to the rest of yourself, that's a real thing. That's not a trivial thing at all. It's fundamentally tied to how we live in the world, you know. And it's, in many respects, it's very much like, where's the grocery store? How do you know that, you know? How does that relate to your sense of the environment, your sense of self, orientation, etc.? I mean, they're big things, and awareness through movement goes right in that direction if you're interested in it. Otherwise, it's like, oh, interesting to do some gentle movements, and oh, I do change. Okay, cool, that was fun, I like this, you know. But if you like this other stuff, it's like, as you say, what the hell? I have no idea what part of my back is on the floor and what part is not. How can I not know that? I'm lying right on the floor right now.
Or some fuzzy, vague idea, and then it...
It clarifies.
CRISPR,
And again, in Dennis's view, that's another super interesting part. It's another one of those 19th century European, actually, European guys looking at sensation and degree of effort along scales. There's a threshold where you know... In the same way that, like, well, is it 4 pounds or 8 pounds that are being added? And do you know? You actually know below threshold as well, but not in a way where you can make conscious assessments about it. So as you work into that area, it becomes super interesting. So the guy Fechner, who was a German or Austrian guy who did that stuff in the 19th century, was... showed, you know, you can plot it. It's a mathematical, relatively invariant process that you can say, like, yeah, there it is around that 140th thing for how much you can lift. But then when you dip below threshold, like, I think it's heavier. Okay, do you think it's heavier? What's your degree of confidence about it? Is it heavier or lighter? Pretty sure it's heavier. People are right in a similar kind of mathematical relationship in there. So until you reach a point where you're below threshold enough that you're not making distinctions, you're just like, I can't tell. Exactly. So
is one of the ideas?
No, please. Yeah, go ahead.
Is one of the ideas that you can get better at that, or like you can increase your range of sensitivity, increase the resolution?
Yes, for sure. And then, and some of that then as you go walking about in your days afterwards, some lessons it really stands out depending on you. For different people, it's different lessons. And maybe it's something where you've been reaching with the arms or something, and you just like pick up a cup and like,
like wow.
Wow, sometimes it hurts when I do this.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt at the moment. So learning that mode of action where you recruit more of yourself to do things, it's also a central part of it. So that's a part where the martial arts piece is really interesting. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I can move this way. If I move this way, and not so much if, as if it's conscious, but to develop these skills where you just move more in a more that's a way that's more fitted to the requirement of what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's a lot of, that's a big pile right there, but you're in a very interesting direction that right away you're kind of like, whoa. Yeah, sensation versus, compared to my pelvis, what the heck? For me, for sure, at the beginning, the very first lesson I ever did, I was like, contact with the floor. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah.
I literally can't tell you much about that. So sometimes there are little imagery tools like, well, if you were like somebody dipped you in ink and then laid you on the floor and you got up and looked at it, what would that be like? Oh, okay, well, now I can think about it, you know?
Yeah, when you said have an impression, maybe like a print or something. Like
yes, exactly.
That's kind of the, where my mind went, like a stamp.
Yes, exactly.
What would it look like?
Because you would.
Yeah.
It's not like, theoretically you would. If there was ink on the back of you, there would be ink on the floor.
Yeah. A couple interesting paintings like that.
Yeah.
From like, I think it's 19th century, or maybe 20th century.
Some Feldenkrais folks have tried that out. It's like, oh, do it. Put yourself on a piece of paper at the beginning of a lesson. Do a certain lesson. Uh-huh. Do it again. It's like, look at that.
Yeah.
It's different.
A little different.
Yeah. And sometimes they're kind of dramatically different, you know? I mean, within the human range of possibility. It's not like, whoa, those heads over there now. Uh-oh. That was the kind of lesson we don't want to do very often. How's that, Ralph?
Thanks,
hey, thank you. It's good to see you.
Pardon?
Good to see you.
Yes, I'd probably come back.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Pardon?
I'm sorry to hear that. Your lovely wife will not be coming back. I'm sorry to hear that.
Pretty badly.
Huh, interesting. Not that it was obvious while she was here, it seemed like, but
no,
when she went...
I don't know, one of the twists.
Ah, and then later she...
Yeah, she stressed it out.
She overdid it
and
a bit.
She's not too, physically fit.
I know, but she seems so interested in it. I'm sorry to hear that.
She
it's good.
Fun up until that time.
If she wants to come back, she's certainly welcome.
She just left today.
You don't have to do anything that seems compromising.
I'll tell her
always.
I'll tell her that. Yeah. And the fact that.